Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Genesis by Robert Story, narrated by Gildert Jackson. In the blackest pits or emptiest of voids, there is always a guiding light. It's just up to us to find it. Robert Story. Fact. On the 31st of October, 2015, an asteroid, possibly a dead comet, with the designation TB145, passed close to Earth at 80,000 miles an hour. This rock measured approximately half a kilometre in diameter, and its impact on our planet would have had the power to devastate a whole continent. The worrying thing is, due to the unusual nature of this asteroid's solar orbit, TB145 was only discovered 3 weeks prior to its flypast of our planet. That an object of this scale evaded our notice highlights the tenuous nature of our existence on the Earth's surface and opens up the questions. Why is there no mechanism in place to detect these threats? Why aren't our governments uniting to combat them? And, perhaps most importantly, how many more dark comets are out there waiting to strike? On the 8th of January 2011, an asteroid with the potential to impact Earth in 2040 was discovered by the Mount Lemmon survey. This near-Earth object was given the designation 2011 AG5. Year 2041 AD. Prologue.
This is SED Command. We are a go for Express Shuttle Launch Zulu-7-2 in T-minus 20 seconds.
The countdown timer in the control station sank under 10 seconds, and SED Command spoke again.
T-minus 7 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Launch.
Another air shuttle roared forth from USSB Sanctuary's Exploration Division, plunging down into the great shaft that cut down into the rocky substrate beneath. Soon after, rockets fired and the craft picked up speed, its blazing lights ploughing through the darkness like a tethered jet fighter as it twisted and turned through massive dark chambers and tight, spiraling tunnels. On the same track, many miles south, another shuttle emerged from a transparent tunnel to cruise to a stop at an SED outpost. A unit of armored Special Forces soldiers disembarked, their Terraforce insignias standing out against their gray and brown camouflage. Weapons and kit were unloaded, and with little ceremony the group of men struck out on a pre-planned route punctuated by waypoint beacons. Following this treacherous path, lines of shielded cabling had already been laid down by those who had gone before. These red conduits of electricity snaked up vertical climbs, down sheer drops, and across the gaping fissures that littered sanctuary proper like a scaly plague. Deeper into the pitch-black void, teams of men and women tackled the unforgiving landscape of the ancient Anakim subterranean world. And further still, at the head of the far-reaching expedition, hundreds of people congregated on a vast plateau where portable floodlights lit up an enormous cavern, transforming the endless night into the dazzle of day. Stripped to the waist, a couple of hundred men heaved on ropes, dragging up heavy pieces of equipment from a deep ravine below. Amongst these toiling souls, an armored man bellowed out orders.
"Pull, you sons of whores! Put your fucking backs into it!"
The efforts of those nearby increased, and the Terraforce leader walked to the cliff edge and peered down before unleashing a string of threatening curses at those beneath.
Further back amidst the masses, Deep Reach team leader Riley Orton heaved back on a rope. His muscles bunched and sweat dripped down his naked torso, while around him blazing lights added to the heat of his exertion. Without sleep for 48 hours, Riley felt fit to drop, and it seemed he wasn't the only one. Ahead of him, a man slumped to the ground in exhaustion, his grip failing. The rope's momentum slowed and stopped as two other men went to his assistance. The incident drew the attention of their uncompromising mission commander, Colonel Sampson, who strode to the scene.
"Leave him!"
"He needs rest," one of the men said. "We all do."
"You'll rest when I say you can rest."
Sampson pushed aside the unconscious man and picked up the rope.
"Now, pull!"
Everyone leant back against the massive weight they were attempting to drag up from below. Hand over hand, the rope moved through Riley's gloves, slow at first, but picking up speed as Sampson continued to berate and push them, while his prodigious strength added impetus to the struggle. A shout of warning came from the cliff edge, and the ground beneath Riley's feet shuddered. 50 feet away, a section of rock disappeared in a cloud of dust, and 10 men vanished from view, their screams echoing into the chamber as they fell. The rope snapped taut, dragging Riley forwards before shearing through his grip as the heavy load dropped.
"Hold!" Sampson shouted. "Hold!"
The man nearest the edge let go and rolled to safety. Sampson, next in line, coiled his arms round the rope and activated his armor's inbuilt anchors. 2 metal bolts fired into the ground, jerking the colonel to a stop with their attached cables. Sampson grunted in pain as opposite forces threatened to rip him in two, and Riley held on as others rushed to their aid. The unbearable weight lessened, and inch by inch, foot by foot, the tide turned back in their favor. After what seemed like an age, their goal neared its conclusion, and the equipment appeared over the ridge and continued up onto flat ground. Riley released the rope and sank to one knee as the other teams around them finished hauling up their respective machinery. He breathed deep, and not for the first time he questioned their conservation of power. It had been deemed prudent to conserve energy by limiting the use of winches. Now they were beyond the reach of an electrical supply. He could see the wisdom behind the decision, but it didn't stop him complaining about it. As Riley contemplated passing out, Sampson detached the cables that secured him in place and made a beeline for the man who'd abandoned his position on the rope. The colonel punched the soldier to the ground.
"Disobey my orders again," Sampson said, standing over his victim, "and I'll throw you over the edge myself. Do you understand me?"
Silence fell on those gathered. Dazed, the man looked up at his attacker before nodding his head. Riley felt a pang of sympathy for the soldier who'd done the only thing he could to save his own life. But as everyone knew, arguing with the colonel was like wrestling with a rabid bull. It could only end one way. Sampson swung round to glare at them.
"What do you think you're looking at? Get back to work!"
The noise of labor resumed, the incident forgotten, but Riley knew Sampson had saved many more men below from being crushed to death, putting his own life on the line when no one else would. It was hard to accept such an animal could demonstrate such selflessness. Although, Riley reasoned, he was probably more worried about losing his precious equipment than lives. Whatever the case, he'd saved them from yet more losses. But there was one thing his actions could never change. It was the colonel's single-mindedness that had pushed their death toll to over 40, and they were still only a few days out from base. How many more will die in the coming days? Riley could only guess.
His hand strayed to the safety harness at his waist, the touch reassuring him he had options should he find himself free-falling to his death. Samson wiped sweat from his brow and accepted a water canister from one of his commanders, and Riley caught himself glaring at the man who seemed hell-bent on pushing them beyond their limits.
"If he keeps this up," a voice said from behind, "none of us are going to make it back to base."
Riley turned round to his friend and deep-reach teammate, the bald-headed Jefferson Church. The bear of a man took on some water, wiped the back of a thick forearm across his bewhiskered face, and passed the flask to Riley, who drank his fill.
"And it'll be for naught if Sarah has already made it to the surface," Riley said.
Jefferson looked skeptical.
"If that's where she's going, she's headed the wrong way."
He lowered his voice.
"What's she doing down here, Rye? I still don't get it."
Riley shrugged. In the spare moments, he'd had to ponder such questions. The answers remained as elusive as the woman herself.
"One thing's for sure," Jefferson said. "Whatever she's taken, they'll do anything to get it back."
Riley murmured his agreement as the colonel turned in their direction.
"You, team leader," Samson said, pointing at Riley. "A word."
The colonel stalked away as more soldiers and SED personnel flooded up onto the plateau from below. Apprehensive, Riley picked up his gear and approached the intimidating presence of the Terra Force commander, who stood staring out over a deep fissure.
"How far until we intercept the route?" Samson said,
his metal-shod boots sending loose sediment skittering down into the abyss.
"According to our charts," Riley said, "after we cross the chasm, about 3 miles."
"And no one's ever come this way before?"
"No, it was deemed too dangerous." Samson grunted.
"Where's your superior?"
Riley looked around. He hadn't seen Locke for some time. I think he said he was going to scout ahead. O'Fion and his two companions went with him. Samson's perpetual scowl deepened at the mention of Silver's chrome-clad leader. He looked Riley in the eye, his ice-cold eyes burning intensely.
"You were close to this woman. You know how she thinks?"
Riley hesitated.
"Withhold information from me, boy," Samson said, "and it'll be the last mistake you make."
Riley stared into the man's feral gaze and didn't doubt him for a second. He nodded.
"What are her chances?" Samson said.
"Of what?"
"Of staying alive."
"Down here, it depends."
"On what?"
"On how well she's prepared," Riley said. "She may be able to locate fresh water in Sanctuary, but there's no food. If she finds water and ekes out her supplies, she could survive for 40 days, maybe 50, max."
"Will she follow the waypoint markers?"
"If she's heading for the temple, she'd be crazy not to." Samson fell silent, and Riley, not sure if he'd been dismissed, felt compelled to fill the uncomfortable break in conversation. "Have you heard from the other teams?" The colonel didn't reply. Instead, he flipped open a pouch and knocked back a handful of something to chew before swallowing it down.
"The second expedition has located their tracks," said a deep voice.
Riley turned as the towering form of O'Fion Nexus appeared out of the gloom, his chrome armor glinting in the light. At his side walked the smaller figure of Dresden Locke, the SED's facility commander. And following behind them both were two women encased in the same shining armor as their leader, O'Fion's ever-present lieutenants. "How many days does Sarah have on them?" Riley said. Locke removed his outdated deep-reach helmet. "They think she's at least a week ahead." He ran a hand through short gray hair. "According to the latest report, anyway."
Riley's hopes soared. If that's the case, he reasoned, after we found a route across the unexplored terrain, we'll get to Sarah first, if we can find a route across, he counseled himself. The only problem was he wasn't sure that was a good thing. He wanted to be there when they caught up to her. But at the same time, that meant the Colonel and Ophion would be there too. Riley glanced at Samson and remembered the conversation he'd overheard between the Colonel and the GMRC Intelligence Director.
"Tear Sanctuary apart if you have to," Joyner had said. "Whatever it takes, whatever the cost, that pendant must be retrieved."
"The woman?" Samson had said.
"Secondary. Alive is better. Dead will do."
Riley suppressed a shudder.
"How far ahead will she be when we make the transition?" Samson said, back in the present. "A day? Three?"
Locke withdrew a knife and bent down to the dusty ground. He drew a line in the dirt and marked one end with the letter T. "This is the path Morgan will take to the temple." He looked up and then made a cross at its center. "And this is where the second expedition is currently located, along with just under half of our force. And they're at least 7 days behind her, maybe nine." He drew another line with the blade and put a circle on it. "This is us." He extended the line but left a gap in its center, then drew in some more features. "Once we cross the chasm, it'll put us right behind her. If she's experienced problems, we may come out ahead of her." Samson sniffed.
"So how many days, old man?"
Locke's jaw tightened at the Colonel's lack of respect.
"In my opinion, considering Morgan's abilities, and with her two friends slowing her down, she'll be less than a day in front by the time we rejoin the temple route."
Samson appeared satisfied with the answer, but Riley could tell Locke had been riled.
"We break camp at 0100, Samson said, scrubbing out the map with a foot. "Tell your men."
The Colonel went to leave, but Locke moved to block his way.
0100? Are you trying to get my people killed?"
"If my men can keep going," Samson said, "so can yours."
"I don't give a damn about your soldiers," Locke said, "and clearly neither do you, but if you think I'm going to tell my teams to keep going without at least a few hours' sleep, you've got another thing coming."
Samson's eyes narrowed and Locke held his ground before the Colonel's lip contorted into displeasure and a growl escaped his lips. The animalistic sound, coupled with the man's ferocious glare, made Locke take an involuntary step back.
"S.E.D. Commander Locke's position is valid," Ophion said in his stone-cold baritone. "Dead men do not make good time."
"We've already lost over 30 souls," Locke said, his tone placating.
40, Riley said. "We just had another collapse." Locke looked at him in alarm. "S.E.D. personnel?" Riley shook his head.
"How many more need to die, Colonel?" Locke said. "Another 40? 60 maybe? 1,000?
"As many as it takes."
"Then you go on alone," Locke said. "I won't help a madman."
Samson's face blanched and he grasped the front of Locke's uniform.
"What did you just call me?"
Riley, sensing imminent bloodshed, stepped forward to intervene, and Samson's manic eyes homed in on the movement, his expression stopping Riley in his tracks. The sound of laughter made Riley turn to see one of Ophion's lieutenants had removed her sculpted helmet. The Chinese woman was stunningly beautiful, and she moved past her leader to trail a beguiling finger up Samson's bulging arm.
"Maybe the Colonel fears lost time," she said, her Asian accent soft. "Maybe he's afraid to stop."
"Unhand me, woman," Samson said, "or lose the hand."
The silver operative gave a throaty chuckle and let the colonel be, while giving Riley the once-over as she passed. Riley followed the woman's seductive walk as she moved away, before turning his attention back to Samson to see the situation defused. Samson pushed Locke aside.
"You've got 3 hours," he said, and stalked off.
Locke shook his head in relief, gave Riley an amiable slap on the shoulder, then walked away without another word. Meanwhile, Ophion spoke quietly with the two women, before also taking his leave. Riley sighed. 3 hours is better than nothing, he decided, and made to follow Locke back to his SED colleagues.
"Riley Orton," the Chinese woman said, making him pause, "we hear you were involved with this Sarah Morgan."
Riley didn't know what to say to this armored assassin, so he decided to stay quiet. The woman approached.
"Your colonel is a dangerous man, is he not?"
"Much like you, I expect," Riley said, looking into the woman's dark eyes. She smiled, the effect dazzling.
"Forgive me. My name's Zhang Bai. I am merely interested in the man who can hold the attention of such a woman as Sarah Morgan."
"Such a woman?" Zhang ran her eyes over Riley's bare chest and then glanced down at the tattoos on his arm.
"You were in the military?"
"For a while." She moved closer.
"And you're a believer?"
She touched the depiction of the crucifix over his heart with soft fingers. Riley felt confused by her attention.
"I..." Zhang smiled again, disarming him. "You don't believe your Sarah is special?"
"She isn't my Sarah. And why such an interest?"
"Not many can afford our services."
Zhang touched the emblem on her armor that spelt out the word silver.
"And fewer still can afford our whole order."
She ran a hand through her jet-black locks.
"I've read Sarah Morgan's dossier. She is quite the woman. Beautiful, athletic, intelligent. But..."
"But what?"
"But flawed. Her psychological profile indicates mental instability."
"Is that so?"
"Have I offended you, Riley?"
She tilted her head.
"May I call you that?"
Riley was too tired for games. "Call me what you like." As he went to move past her, she grasped his arm, her grip surprising in its power.
"Strong women need strong men, Riley Orton. Be careful where you tread. The darkness is full of peril."
Riley gazed into her sultry eyes. She released her hold and let him continue on his way, while leaving him at a loss as to what she was going on about. "And she says Sarah's unstable. Was she propositioning me or threatening me?" Rejoining his teammates, Riley settled down for some much-needed sleep, and his last vision before he closed his eyes was that of the silver woman, Zhang Bai, who remained looking in his direction as her masked female companion returned to her side. As he drifted off to sleep, for once, his thoughts weren't dominated by the mesmeric blue eyes of Sarah Morgan, the woman in the eye of a storm. Chapter 1. Colonel Sampson sat staring out into the darkness. He hadn't slept for days. Whatever Joyner and his pet agent had pumped into him, it kept his mind whirring away like a never-ending nightmare. Pain lanced through his head, forcing him to clench his teeth. His pills still had an effect, but it was like he wasn't there, didn't exist. The thought, the feeling of not being, of not existing, terrified him.
Am I real?
He wondered. He clenched an armored fist. It felt real.
I feel real. I just don't feel here.
He concentrated on the task at hand.
Find Sarah Morgan, retrieve the pendant, kill Ophion, kill Joyner, kill them all, every last one.
Another thought wormed its way into his mind. He had something else, far more important, to do.
Find Brett, he told himself. Find your daughter. And that went so well last time, didn't it, Colonel?
He shifted his position.
That was Steiner's fault. This time will be different. We'll do things our way, my way. Time's running out. The meteors are coming. Or had you forgotten? Of course I haven't forgotten.
Sir? Samson looked up at a special forces officer. Sir, the man said again, a communication's come through from the SED. Samson stared at the soldier, waiting for him to get to the point. The officer grimaced in discomfort. You wanted to know if Silver received any encrypted messages. One's just come through, and they've sent an operative to access it.
Samson stood up. Nexus?
No, sir, it's a woman, one of the two that follow him around.
Samson donned his helmet and collected his rifle. Take me there.
The soldier moved to the top of the cliff, connected himself to a line, and dropped over the edge. Samson did likewise, abseiling down to the ground 200 feet below. At the bottom, the two men worked their way through the sleeping bodies of Terra Force and SED personnel to travel back the way they'd come hours before. Climbing up a steep incline, they passed by more weary troops who continued to filter in from the rear of the 2-mile-long procession.
You men,
Samson said, gesturing to a unit of 5 commandos with a sweep of his hand, with me. The soldiers fell in behind, with weapons drawn on their colonel's command. 10 minutes later, they entered a narrow ravine, and the lights of the portable communication terminus came into view. Numerous cables snaked into its specially designed receiver, which filtered out the unwanted interference created by Sanctuary's foundations, the curious substrate the Anakim had manipulated in order to build the supporting structure of their underground world. A chrome-clad figure stood next to the comms station, her slim form a sliver of light in the gloom. On the left, a deep drop fell away below, while on either side high rock faces continued up into the distant darkness. A small contingent from the U.S. Army Signal Corps worked nearby, using robotics to unsnag the long lengths of cable that served as their lifeline back to base and the SED within. The woman, her face concealed behind her mirrored visor, looked up as Samson and his small company approached.
"I hear we've been contacted,"
Samson said, slowing to a halt some feet away. The silver operative's mask shimmered into transparency to reveal the grey eyes of the Chinese woman within.
"We have. It is quite interesting. Would you care to listen?"
"Where's Nexus?"
"With my sister, Zhang."
She reached up and pressed a button on the side of her helmet.
"If you're trying to send a transmission," Samson said, motioning at the walls around them, "you should know. This is a dead zone."
The woman let her arm drop back down, but Samson noticed her other hand had slipped behind her back.
"What did it say?"
Samson said when she failed to respond.
"It said Silver is to resume command."
"On whose orders?"
She hesitated, then said,
"Malcolm, join us."
Samson gave a hollow laugh.
"I doubt that."
The woman didn't reply, her eyes remaining fixed on Samson.
"Your precious committee thinks it can control me," Samson said, preparing himself. "But they made one big mistake."
The woman shifted her stance.
And what was that?
Threatening my daughter.
The woman frowned, and Samson
Sample complete. Ready to continue?